So thank you, Hope. And let's see how we can get microcredit and health moving together. Anybody would like to start in terms of ideas?
Stephen is the one to answer this as a strategic opportunity.
Are you put
Stephen, would you like my seat? Would you like my seat?
Take a minute. Let me. Okay. Well, okay. I'll give you a minute. One of the things I wanted to ask you is Ontario has early childhood development programs. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about what they're doing in terms of multicultural communities and they have specific programs?
The Premier just announced?
Well, what they've been doing and what changes are happening. Are you aware of any of what's been happening?
Well,
recent or not?
I'm not an expert in that area, but yes, I think that we are aware, and yes, I realize that they've made some changes. I think that the essence of the change is that they want to take the latest evidence and put that back into the programming, and that there is an organization called Health Nexus, which is a non-government organization or a voluntary organization that has been contracted to put together a training program which will include the newest evidence. So that's not a full answer, but that's a piece of the answer. And Monique, do you know?
Wisdom about why Quebec managed to reduce the poverty rate of children is basically linked to the garderie at $7, the daycare, mm-hmm. universal daycare at $7,
yes.
And in particular. And Ontario just announced that it's going to have full day, full time, yes. Universal 4 years old and 5 years old. Into developmental, not just, I don't like the word daycare. It's the word maternelle from France tells it because it's developmental as well. And that is starting over 5 years. And when that exists, lowering it to 3 years of age is easier than healthcare in the States.
Okay. Yes.
So, Laurette was...
Mark... I don't want to put you on the spot, but as they talk about the great performance of improving children's health here in Quebec, I think the Fondation Chagnon has been a key actor there. If you could briefly, Bo, talk a bit about what do you think created those results in Quebec, but also in terms of funding, we are here in terms of credit and financial empowerment, and those funds that Quebec has been creating between government and foundation are very innovative. And if you could kind of just briefly talk to us about this, I think it will benefit.
Yes, first, may I test for something? Do you think this is working?
Yeah, it is.
It's for the, okay, just remove some. I can talk loudly. I will talk loudly anyway. About the first question, what is responsible for the improvement of child health or child financial status in Quebec? I think that Monique Bégin said, part of it is daycare system or all that was invested in supporting families. Daycare is one thing, but there's also huge policies that were created to support or give more money to the families, the poor families. I think this is one of the basic factor that has improved the status.
Is it welfare that you're talking about?
Yes, welfare and employment policies, federal and provincial, as a matter of fact. And economic analysis of this are quite...
Paternity leave and child
leave.
Yes, it's more recent, the paternity leave, but maternity leave, the longer how you call that, the break that the women takes when...
It's the richest of Canada.
Yeah, and it's as much to do with the improvement that is that has been observed. And in this way, I should disagree with what you said in terms of economic policies are not really related to the status of the poverty status of the population. It's hugely related, I think. It's to keep it simple. The money has very much to do with the status of children. This is. No.
And I would agree with her as a former politician.
It may not be, indeed.
It's way up.
Yeah.
It does touch their lives.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. In terms of awareness of this effect, of this determinant, maybe it's not so high. The awareness may be low. Now, for the other aspect of what you talked about, the investment of the foundation is conjointly with the government of Quebec, we've created huge funds, specialized funds. One, the first one is Quebec Enfant, which anybody in Quebec should have heard this one. It's 2 years old now, and it consists of a $40 million investment per year to support local communities in terms of creating or, let's say, support the emergence of new ways of intervening in the local.
It's 40 million.
It's $40 million, 20 from the government, 20 from Fondation Chagnon. And it tries to let local community organize themselves to provide services or provide interventions for people are, well, from all, now, I'm sorry, it has changed a bit, but before it was for people between 12 and 18, and it has been widened to reach zero from 17 now. So local communities regroup and present projects to this fund, and they are accepted and followed for time it takes to implement and to realize what is intended to happen. And there's another fund that was created quite recently, maybe two months ago, that is the same principle. It's called Quebec Enfant, and it's for local community again, and it focuses on 0-4 years. And it's quite in line with what you said, based on the determinants, social determinants of health. We are trying to support local communities, giving them tools and allowing them to organize what they want to do, not doing some top-down approach as was documented before. A top-down approach for this kind of mobilization have doing things in the Fondation Chagnon. Before, it was rather less focused and rather like a global agency funding everything that could be funded. This has changed a lot. Okay.
The question, because it will relate to Stephen's strategic opportunity, do you give startup money so also that the community projects have to be sustainable, economically sustainable within 5 years or within 5 years or whatever deadline? Or do you kind of support forever if a community needs you?
No, forever is not in our language at all. But as a matter of fact, these things have changed a bit. Not the forever thing, but we give more than before. We give startup money,
okay,
which we didn't do before. But we understood, take some time, but we understood that people cannot organize without seed money somewhere, so we're doing that right now. And we give money for evaluation. We give money for what we call the operational costs that are not related really to the intervention. But there's a limit somewhere, and we speak all the way with the organism about sustainability, about perennity, and is it a word? Something that will last, okay? We're focusing really on this because there was too many things that existed for 3-4 years, and after 2 years of startup, disappeared because there's no sustainability. So one of the criteria right now is sustainability.
There's some misconceptions about this universal daycare in Quebec, and I actually want to add to this is that, yes, the daycare has been great, but the take-up rate has actually been done by the middle and income people and the upper middle income class. So to the extent there's been improvement in child poverty, it doesn't come from there. I mean, this is a...
Because mothers went back.
No, the poor mothers don't go, they don't use it. They stay at home. That's what we have. Evil economists like myself who actually make studies like this, I've actually looked at the take-up rates on this, and it works out for the middle-income people, not the poor people. All right, so there's got to be, so to the extent there's been improvement in child poverty, it's got to come elsewhere from that program. So the program might have helped somewhat, but really it's on the margin. That's the first thing. The second thing is that to answer, or some answers to questions is whether microcredit has been helpful or could be helpful for child poverty. I think one good possible link of question is that it's from Desjardins. I mean, Desjardins is the banker of most people in Quebec, especially in these remote areas where presumably there's more poverty. So to the extent that microcredit can do something to help health and child poverty, this is where you guys can bring something. Because, you know, microcredit, not so much as a social collateral, but as small loans and as helpers of these, lone parents' household going there, is whether there's a role for credit for this is, you know, line of the answer has got to be from experience in Quebec, all right, and from Desjardins. So.
Improvements over the last 10 years, if it came from better financial services from institutions such as Desjardins, we would be able to see this. And so perhaps then some discussions there would be helpful.
Yeah.
So, because again, the numbers that Hope is showing are not the numbers about now, the numbers about the last 10 years. So the lessons learned are there.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to say is following up on what you're saying. But I think, aside from that, you opened a very important question the way I see it.
Okay.
And that is financial security helps, is related to health.
Mm-hmm.
So the question, and then you say, well, if microfinance could help health. Well, that implies that microfinance is giving you financial security. Now.
Or empowerment.
Well, let me just keep the financial security for the time being. We can go to empowerment later.
Okay.
So the question then is, and this is a question to all the microfinance people, and Delia as well, and that is, do microfinance institutions... I can speak louder.
Yes.
Do microfinance institutions have, as one of their social goals, and social is the important part here, social goals, financial security? And if they have that goal, do they accomplish that goal? Now, based on what I saw in the morning about the interest rates on the very small loans to very poor people of $1,000 being 60-70%, I don't know. So I think the question is open as to is it would microfinance at the lowest end of the spectrum with such onerous interest rates that we saw, which may be wrong, I don't know. Okay, I don't know. I don't work on this thing, right? All I saw was in the morning. Stephen is saying no. Fine. But so there is a difference between different microfinance institutions. This is what I was saying, that it's important to know whether a given microfinance institution has a social goal, which is financial security, and does it accomplish that security based on the average numbers we saw today? It's a question mark. Okay, and so that's why the question is to all the microfinance people and Delia, who has been doing all this research, to tell us, is it true or is it not true? Because if it is true, then I think you have answered your question. That yes, microfinance can help the health and the well-being.
Thank you. Can we put up the one slide? Can we put that slide back up?
Hope, I just want to give you a response on the issue of social business. If I see the figures of 650,000 families, then on the business side, maybe we should think in Canada on the issue of working with the power of, yes, of with the power of franchising. If you can imagine, we have 650,000 people in Canada, 650,000 families who have not an identity. And if you can imagine, you are now an entrepreneur and you know how to create business, like the Marriott Group in a hotel. And you create one hotel in one town, and your object is this hotel is only driven by the people who normally doesn't have a job, who normally doesn't have an identity. You create it very, very nicely, like a W hotel or like, you know, with a high identity. And then you let it run, and all what you have to do is after 2 or 3 years, you create it, and then you scale it up as a franchise. Imagine you have a coffee shop like Starbucks, who was not designed to be profit maximum, who was designed as a social business. You start with one small coffee shop. You try to have the most impact of the objectives to include the women and the mothers, to give them the right way how to work, to be a mother and to work and to be on the side. You do it and you scale it up. I know a story from an Australian woman. She was at home. She designed biofood. She did the design of biofood. She gave it to other mothers. In only 2 years, she employed in a franchising system 6,000 other mothers. So working on a franchise, bringing the best people together, then their designing power is not to be done to design the next profit maximum business. They design a social business with the object to give the maximum identity via franchise into the whole stuff. So that can be one solution for it, because I guess a lot of this woman doesn't have at the moment this current status quo to come out and directly start a business, but there would be love to be in a community-based concept store. We have a lot of different ideas of how to do it, but that can be one answer for social business. To remind you, the most important thing is to bring the best excellence people together. So if you do something like a hotel can be a nice social business object, do it better than the rest of the market. You know? So this is one idea how you can do it maybe in Canada.
Steven. Yes. You go ahead and then...
just raised the hand because he was talking about microfinance, about the what. No, I don't think I have the answer. Maybe the other person has the answer. But the problem of the high interest rate is a concern of people who don't know, who are not familiar with microfinance, and the concern that maybe there is a problem because the rate of interest is too high. But that's the rate of interest is just showing what is called the cost of opportunity of the money, because the loans are so small, the interests are high because management of the loan is very expensive. But the return of the micro loans is a lot higher. So it compensates by big march the difference between the high interest rate and the return that the people get from the business. So the security is not only coming from the cost, it's not associated with the cost of the loan. There is something else in microfinance, especially in the solidarity group model, is the network. There is a process of network and common trust that is developed at the same time that you are having access to the credit. That's where the process of empowerment takes place. I just wanted to add.
There's been a lot of misunderstanding, and let me try to clarify some of the things. As we talked about social business. As a manager of a social business, you have to be socially responsible. And being socially responsible is not taking advantage of those who have no other alternative. Grameen America cannot make a profit day one charging 15% interest. We couldn't make a profit if we were charging 100% interest in our first year. But if we were going to set up a model of charging 100% interest because there is a desperate need for the money, we're not being socially responsible. We are taking advantage of those people who have no other alternative. But if we can build scale and we can do this at an interest rate that is in line, and being in line is a definition not of being less than the money lender on the street. It's being in line with what the risk is for that loan. We are below credit card debt. We are below other alternatives for financing. I don't know whether 15% is the correct amount. Professor Yunus has a philosophy on this. He doesn't think that the loan to the borrower should be above 10% above your cost of capital. So if you were paying 5% for your money, you can charge 15%. If you're paying 60% for your money, you can charge 70%. But who's going to pay 60%? A businessman wouldn't pay 60% for his money because it's too high. So let him be the one who decides what interest rate should be charged. To get to the how do we combine and how do we provide a service and how do we lift people out of poverty? When I joined Grameen America a year ago, I said, that's great. We're going to put out loans of $3,000, $2,000, and we're going to lift everybody out of poverty. But if you take a step back and say, okay, we're going to give you, a smart businessman, or you, a very smart businessman, a loan of $1,500. How much money are you going to make on $1,500? If you were really successful and you devoted your full time and attention to this, maybe you would make $3,000, including the contribution of your labor. And then you would have to pay the interest on the loan and pay the loan back. So we determined that a $1,500 loan gives our borrower about $1,500 of additional disposable income. Not giving them the $9,400 that you pointed out that you need. It's giving them only $1,500. Now, what does that $1,500 do for that person? It gives them the ability to either buy clothing for their children, go to see a doctor that they wouldn't have the money to have, maybe buy books, maybe do something for the benefit of the family. But if you were making $20,000 a year, which is a level that these people are earning, and you're getting an additional $1,500, that's a very sizable amount of increase. Because if you were making $100,000 and you were going to get an extra $10,000, you'd have a lot of good things to do with that additional money. And that is what our focus has been on building up this business. And as we extend our model and as we stay at these relatively low interest rates, we will build up enough income to support our staff. We will reinvest the money every year because loans are paid back on an annual basis. And if we're fortunate enough, and we will be in the fifth year, to have additional money within the company, we would be able to provide an additional service. We think that additional service is going to be some type of health-related service, whether it is opening a clinic, and we have read studies and have evaluated that if we had 10,000 borrowers in a very concentrated area, being New York City, we can afford to open up a clinic, hire doctors and staff, and provide primary care. I can't tell you that in 5 years that we will do this because there might be alternatives that are better. We do not want to provide a service that's not needed. We don't want to be a microfinance company. Professor Yunus doesn't want us to do microfinance if there was someone else who would do it on the terms that he thinks is appropriate. But there is no one else who will do that. There are organizations that charge exceptionally high interest rates. You do a calculation of 60% interest. I'm just saying, if you do, you take a $1,000 loan. At the end of 1 year, you owe $1,600. Right. At the end of 2 years, you owe $2,500. You're never getting out of poverty. You're just promoting poverty forever. If you take the step as a socially responsible person to put an interest rate that the person can afford to pay it back, you can lift people out of poverty. So I think I rambled a little too much. I hope I straightened things out. So now, how do we bring this session together so that we can come up with a plan to recommend? Does anyone have an idea?
There's a Brazilian idea.
Oh.
Fabio.
Brazilian.
Innovation from Brazil.
Okay, well, she's in charge of the microphone.
Should I carry on or just stop? All right. I totally agree with him. I think, but just this comment that what we believe us, we discussed in morning. The loan officers are in the houses of these entrepreneurs, of the low-income holders, and we know that most of these entrepreneurs, they work and, they have their activities, and most of them, they do their businesses without taking into consideration good conditions that would provide good health or definitely put their children into risks and even their own health. So what we believe is that, and that's an initiative we've been discussing in two regions in Brazil, but this is still being built. Yeah, there is in two different regions, as in very small, tiny towns, this initiative of some hospitals that they take some doctors and advisors that come to the community. So I know it's simple, but one thing that we are planning to do, we're discussing how we could come together to the communities and related to the education, not only to discuss about financial education, which is extremely important, but to discuss very basic issues regarding health. Yeah, for example, if you think of an entrepreneur that has an oven in the backyard of their homes, and they produce some materials in this improvised oven, and where probably is placed in a very small, very tiny, 10 meters squared. Can you imagine like children playing there, and at the same time this activity being held? So isn't there any chance for us as loans provider to think of, okay, let's think of how you can still do your business, but in a such way or with certain materials, or that you could avoid certain exposure to your children and even to yourself. So I think this is something very simple. This is something very small. It's not to the point which should be very positive to build clinics and hospitals. I know that in Bangladesh there is this BRAC institution, which has hospitals, even the Grameen, some initiatives regarding something bigger than simply giving instructions. But I think this is the beginning. Yeah, this is something that can help. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on this.
Just one question, which I would kind of propose that, if depending on the answer, could be one of the strategic business opportunity. I'd like to ask Monique and Mary, who are two well experienced politicians, who know very well the health system in Canada. Could the Grameen Canada be a strategic business opportunity within the context of Canada, in terms of when we look at the need for daycare, the need for the type of community infrastructure that help address poverty? That's what do you think, Monique?
No, it's not an expertise or experience or observation that I, you know, in Ottawa years ago we founded a credit union for women and all of that, which is not exactly the same, and we failed. And I'm sorry, I have no experience in that.
Well, my sense was that the Grameen experiment is not reliant on government, that it's something that is done through the community. So I certainly can see that possibility. And, in fact, I would think that might be one of the things coming out of here, would be to recommend the exploring how that concept could be, I think, developed in Canada. It might be somewhat different, but those kinds of opportunities. But I think along with it needs to be some good evaluation, because too often we undertake new initiatives, we don't really evaluate them, and we don't really know what the impact is. In terms of the role of government, I mean, a lot of the provincial governments now are getting involved in various things related to the social determinants of health. It's not consistent, but Quebec is certainly the leader, but there are now five provinces that have poverty reduction strategies. We're lobbying for that in British Columbia, along with a whole range of initiatives on social determinants of health, and we're seeing pieces. I doubt, given the current economic climate, that we're going to see any comprehensive policy response, but hopefully we can move forward with the pieces. And in BC, for example, they've committed to full-day kindergarten, and we were actually quite surprised that even given the really budgetary deficit, they have committed to go ahead with that next year. So each one of these we have to sort of celebrate and say, good for you, now here's the next thing on the agenda, get with it.
It's a question for Stephen. Stephen, if President Obama were to ask you, does microfinance on the Grameen model create jobs in the United States, what would you say, what evidence would you have? Would these be jobs that would show up in government statistics so that when a guy like Larry Summers ran the numbers, he'd know that it was true and want to do more?
We have about 10% unemployment in the U.S. And if our borrowers had an alternative, for example, they can go out and get a second job, they have the opportunity to work overtime at their existing job, or they weren't just cut back from 40 hours a week to 32 hours a week or some reduction in pay, I would say that we were not really creating jobs because they could do something else with their time. But because our borrowers do not have any alternative to make this money, I think for every loan we put out, we are creating a job at the borrower level. Now, I don't think as an organization we create that many jobs. We have 26 people working for us so far. If we would probably wind up having the same type of numbers that you have. If we had 100,000 borrowers, we would have 600 employees. I mean, it's not that we're going to have, 10,000 employees and make a difference. But if we had 90,000 or 100,000 borrowers, That would be 100,000 people who are employed. And hopefully, and it hasn't happened within our first 2 years, that a borrower will get large enough that they would have to hire somebody. We have some borrowers who have food carts, and their children work for them. We can stretch and say that's an employee, because the mother operates the food cart for 8 hours during the day, and then the child runs the cart for 4 more hours after school. That's a job. I mean, we are creating jobs. I would tell Obama that we are creating jobs. We have put into applications that we are creating jobs. We have told the Small Business Administration that we are creating jobs. And they buy into it because they know there's no alternative for these people.
Does this all happen in the informal economy, or would it show up in governments?
Some people that have borrowed money from us have told us specifically that they are filing tax returns and paying taxes. We do not ask. It's not our responsibility, just like the banks don't ask if you pay taxes on your income. They just tell you that you made income on your savings accounts.
The thing is, this is in the premises of microfinance belief. Yeah, well, you're investing. That's at least when we sat in the morning. We choose to work with what we said, productive oriented microfinance, which means just lending money to the ones that are entrepreneurs, and at least in our case, almost 100% of them do not have any formal paper of their businesses. And the reason for it is that because they're really excluded. And yes, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, every single borrower, respecting the level of the businesses they are and the way they are managing their businesses. But, for example, in Brazil, more than 60 million people work in the informality, in the informal sector. I'm addressing here not only the entrepreneurs, but also the micro employees, let's say, the employees of these entrepreneurs. So think of a seamstress that has one machine, you know, sewing machine, and then in the evening she can buy two other sewing machines and hire informally two friends or two neighbors. So, I mean, this is definitely generating jobs. Obviously, to become a formal job and therefore start to pay taxes, there is still a road here. But I mean, you are definitely influencing the economy in this region. Yeah, definitely.
Just to make a couple comments on the discussion about job creation, I think it kind of underlines the importance of incorporating research and when you want to answer very, very important questions like this. And so I'm not commenting on Grameen US or Banco Real in particular. Those programs, I couldn't say whether they create jobs or don't create jobs. Just looking at the two studies that I presented, employment creation was one of the metrics measured. And in the case of the Philippines, they found that existing businesses actually shrank in terms of employment, which is quite a surprising result. The theory behind that might be that businesses actually became more efficient. So job creation may be coming, but by shedding workers that were unproductive, those businesses did increase their profits. In the case of India, since the evaluation was done at the community level, employment there was no significant difference in terms of employment in those micro businesses between treatment and control groups. So again, I would never say, no one would ever say, make a pronouncement based on two studies, but it does show that incorporating this research into microcredit programs can help us really get at the mechanisms for how job creation occurs and what's happening, and therefore improve products and product design.
I was going to ask some time ago, so this kind of reminded me, and we were talking outside this room about whether any of the indicators that are being the data that's being collected relates to health in these projects, because it would be very interesting to find out whether the health of these people over time is actually improving. Because the in terms of the research that we've done here in Canada and elsewhere, it shows that not only does income have a major impact on health, but in both ways, or lack of and income itself, but that it's not just about having money. It's about that empowerment that a job and or some meaningful role in society has, and because some of the just the difference in health outcomes between people in Canada who are on welfare and those that are employed but still below the poverty line, because there are people in Canada that are working. But we call them the working poor. They still fall below the poverty line, but they are working. The difference in health outcomes is striking between those two groups. So it's not just having the money; it's also having the role. And I think it'd be interesting to see what the health outcomes of these people are. But B, I think that the empowerment that goes along with the process you've described at Grameen and some of these other initiatives must have an impact on health. And it'd be very interesting to use some of the, you know, to research that those outcomes to see what that impact is.
I'm going to pass it on to Jan to conclude. Just before, one comment I'd just like to make is I met Juana Bordes, who leads the Latina Leadership Center in Denver. And they've been running a networking center for women for 30 years. And what they've noticed is that businesses have been created, people have hired people, and were able to expand their businesses. And not only that, they've actually now have members who started 30 years ago who are now making over $1 million a year. So I think the history of microcredit may not allow us to get all the information we want, but there are centers that may have information that could be of use in terms of helping move forward while data is being collected in microfinance. So, Jan?
Thanks, Ellen.